This podcast is being sponsored by MyComicShop.com. Come visit us at ColdSlitherPodcast.com and then click on the link through our front page to MyComicShop.com. Shop there and keep the podcast going free. And you'll get new releases of comic books delivered right to your door. MyComicShop.com through ColdSlitherPodcast.com. Do it today. The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. Yeah. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Yeah.
And the man behind the sound effects tonight is at @agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
Our man @PCN_dirt on Twitter can't be with us tonight. We're hoping he's staying safe as his area of Illinois is getting hit by some massive tornadoes.
Stay safe, Dirt. Stay safe.
Please. And also not here with us tonight is @RoddyCat on Twitter. He's stuck at work, but he has given us his click of the week, which you will find out later on in the show. But first, some housekeeping things to get out the way. Make sure to follow the Twitter account for Comic Book Chronicles @CBCron. And go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Add us to your Google circles. Just search for The Click Nation and join the Click Nation community on Google+. Subscribe to us various ways, youtube.com/theclicknation. We're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Just search for The Click Nation. We are also on the TuneIn app via the Cold Slither Podcasting Network. So just search for the Cold Slither Podcast Network and add the network, and you can see all the various shows. The Classic Team Up, The Good and Terrible Show, The WrestleCast,
The Baker Bone and Rome Bad Advice Show,
yep, Crowns and Collards, and much more. And we are also a part of the Comic Related Podcasting Network.
Comic Related!
Make sure to go to comicrelated.com and coldslitherpodcast.com. And our comic book reviews can be also seen on the popculturenetwork.com and comicbookroundup.com. Remember to use the hashtag CBCron on your various social media websites and discuss the show. And we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. So if you're at home, make sure to turn us on and give us a view.
There you go.
Oh, and also give us 5-star reviews and thumbs up on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Help us move up those podcast rankings.
That's right. However it is you download us, make sure you give us the highest ratings possible.
Basically. Like us, damn it.
There you go.
All right, let's look at some of the cinematic news for this week.
What do we got here?
Ash versus
I was about to say, you know what? Before we jump into this, I know I'm cutting off the very first one, but we all know what's going to happen at midnight tonight.
Well, technically, I heard it's 3 a.m. Eastern time.
3 a.m. Eastern time. We all know what happens at 3 a.m. Eastern time. This should lead off our cinematic news. The Netflix Daredevil show will be released. And as soon as this show ends, I will be signing up for my Netflix account. There you go, 30 people.
30 days free.
That's right.
Your new user.
There you go. So, you know, you're going to see a big uptick in Netflix memberships, you know, today, tomorrow, when the Daredevil show, you know, when it becomes available. And I'm sure there's more announcements that we've got coming up. But that's got to be the big news for this week.
Most definitely. I'm not that big of a binge watcher, but I will try to knock out all, was it 12 or 13 episodes?
Something like that.
At least by Sunday.
That's probably what I'm going to end up doing. Watch them in chunks. I plan on finally catching Furious 7 over the weekend, so that's going to kind of take up some time on Saturday, but I definitely plan on finishing the Daredevil season by end of business Sunday or maybe possibly Monday, but I don't plan on going further than that.
Yeah, Saturday I'm actually going to, I guess, a mini comic zine show Saturday. Probably I won't spend too much time there, but
oh, that's pretty cool.
So I'll go check that out and then come back home and get back to watching.
Get the scoop.
There you go.
All right. So I'm sorry to absolutely hijacked the opening of that. So let's start again. Let's restart.
Take two. Let's see. Ash versus Evil Dead title, teaser, and poster is revealed.
Okay.
There's two more trailers for Devil, Origins and Fear. Gotham is set to introduce Clayface, Mr. Freeze, and Mad Hatter, and possibly Court of Owls in season 2.
Wow, you see how fast Court of Owls has become, you know, mainstream?
Yeah, that Batman versus Robin story that has the Court of Owls as the main villain, I think that comes out in, like, pretty soon.
Yeah, very soon. I saw preview images, right? Didn't they have preview images?
I saw one last night, a preview video of Nightwing and Damian sparring against one another.
Right. And I think there's reviews up also, so I guess that, you know, there's some preview copies that have been released. And I'm fairly certain, you know, there are some mixed reviews out there. I don't know if this is the strongest entry into DC Animated in a while, you know, according to the reviews that I read. But, you know, I guess we'll have to wait and see. You know, hopefully we'll all have a chance to take a look at it and see what we think. All right.
So next up we got, reportedly some Marvel animated projects could tie into the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
What do you think of that?
I mean, it's smart. There's some stuff that maybe wouldn't work necessarily as live action, so why not put them out there in animated form?
Right. Do you think they need to step up their game with their animation, though? You know, in order to kind of convince people that it's worth watching?
It kind of depends. Like, Marvel and Disney are more going the kid-friendly route, whereas DC and Warner Brothers will put out, you know, the straight to DVD digital release, Blu-ray release of sort of more mature themed stories like the Batman Arkham Assault from Arkham.
Right, and what we were just talking about, Batman versus Robin.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's interesting. You know, we've kind of come to expect that the Marvel animated projects aren't going to be quite as, you know, as you said, you know, on the maturity level. They're not going to be on the same maturity level. You know, it's a tough sell for me, you know, tying these all in together, because I'm wondering if they're going to end up being subpar compared to the DC stuff.
Yeah, it remains to be seen.
Yeah, no, mixed feelings about that.
I mean, I wouldn't be against them trying it.
Oh, of course.
Wouldn't hurt to try.
You know what? They just need to step their game up, bottom line.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting story. I don't know. I'm not an Arrow person. Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. I knew you were, but I had to ask because there's always new listeners. So, Tim, please explain to me why Manu Bennett, this is the actor, I believe, that played Deathstroke on Arrow.
Yes.
Why does he think that Arrow took Deathstroke in the wrong direction?
Honestly, I have no idea, because this is the first I've seen this story. I guess he's salty about something.
Did they write the character out of the show?
I mean, he got captured and he got left imprisoned on the island last season. He actually showed up this season because Oliver and his sister Thea went back to the island, so he reappeared. Okay, so I opened a link from comicbook.com where it's got his quotes. He says, "I think Deathstroke had a lot of possibilities with Arrow, but I think they took it in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should have honored the Marvel Wolfman character who was literally unstoppable. I read the DC comics and thought Deathstroke was so bad, A-R-S-E, because they make it that nobody can stop him. He's not even superpower, he is just a mercenary," explained Bennett. "It took the Justice League to defeat him. It took an army to take him on. And Arrow, it took a while for Oliver to prove his point, but season 3 was just a being a slay at an insult to injury."
See, I thought And later on in the article, they mentioned what I thought was the real reason why the actor might be a little bit bitter about how they're treating Deathstroke is because Slade Wilson, you know, Deathstroke the Terminator, is, you know, rumored to be appearing in the new Suicide Squad movie, played by Joe Manganiello. And I thought, you know, they basically lost the ability to use him because this character is going to appear in the movie. So I thought maybe that's why he was saying, well, you know, they could have done a lot more with it. Now they've lost their chance. So, you know, that could possibly be part of it, too. That could be part of it also.
It says, arguably the biggest news in the story is that Bennett will not return to Arrow, but that's only stated in the article. The quotes themselves don't support such a bold statement unless there's more to the interview that will run later. Yeah, so I wonder if maybe he won't return because he's going to be used in Suicide Squad, just like they had to write out Deadshot,
right.
For those same reasons.
Yep. So, all right.
Speaking of animated movies, Justice League Gods and Monsters sneak peek was released this week.
Okay. Did you watch it?
Yeah. It had the same animation as, like, Justice League and whatnot, and it's basically like a dark version of the Justice League, I guess, from, like, a different Earth, perhaps.
Okay.
I had to ask a more seasoned DC vet what it all means. Yeah, what stories they're pulling from. Arrow may tackle Hive in season 4. I know nothing about Hive.
Hive is like AIM.
Oh, okay.
You know, Hive is like the group of DC evil super scientists.
Who I don't like in Marvel. They seem boring to me. Bunch of the beekeepers, as they call them.
I was going to say, they've played a somewhat prominent role in the latest Avengers, you know, care of, you know, pushing forward the Hickman mumbo-jumbo storyline, but we'll get into that later.
All right. Next up, the Flash solo film eyes Phil Lord and Chris Miller to direct.
Okay.
So the members of the Avengers will assemble on Jimmy Kimmel Live and Good Morning America.
Yeah, next week. They're really, you know, they're really going to start. If they, you know, listen, we're already in the middle of the hype for Avengers Age of Ultron. But it seems like with 2 weeks to go, they're going to turn up the levels to 11 and just get everybody out there. They're going to assemble, like, the main Avengers cast on Jimmy Kimmel Live and Good Morning America. You know, talk about Disney ABC synergy, right?
And they're going to show some never before seen
clips.
Clips, thank you.
See, now, are you going to open your eyes and use your ears when these clips play, or are you going to be like me and be like, la, 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 not going to watch, not going to listen?
I don't really watch late night or morning shows, so I doubt I see either unless it's just the clips on various websites. And two, I told myself I was going to stop watching all these TV clips that have been coming on this past week, but I've gone and watched a couple of them. But I think I decided tonight, especially since apparently screeners got to see the movie tonight, and people are like tweeting, not spoilers, but just, you know, overall reaction to seeing the film. I'm going to start like dodging stuff, like start using filters, just filter out Age of Ultron.
That's funny. I've absolutely started the campaign to avoid any more commercials anymore. If I see it, I look away. If I hear it, you know, I change the channel just for a second. I'm doing my best to try to avoid it because in the next 2 weeks, I really don't want to see any more footage of this film.
I'm tired of the trailers, the commercials.
Well, you know what it is? Because we're sold. We're the choir. We don't need to be preached to anymore.
And it's we're under a month now, so
yeah,
we can stop now.
Seriously. I wonder, did they show an Avengers trailer before Furious 7?
No.
Okay, good.
Yeah. What did I get before that? I don't know if anything stood out. I can't even remember.
Because then I'll have to do the la, 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 la. I don't hear a damn thing during Furious 7. That'd be pretty rough.
That's bad, because I guess it was last week I saw it. Yeah, last Saturday or Friday.
And the trailers were pretty unremarkable.
I mean, that doesn't don't go by me because my memory on some stuff is bad. So it could have been something awesome, and I just don't remember it at all.
That's awesome.
Mission Impossible.
Okay.
Because it just released that trailer right before it came out, so
right. That
was like the one that stood up.
Speaking of Avengers spoilers, you want to discuss the next story we have here?
Yes. All so right. Avengers Age of Ultron won't have a post-credit scene, Josh Whedon says.
Yeah, so I guess this means once we catch the mid-credit scene, we can actually all get up and leave as opposed to sitting around and waiting.
Yeah, I suppose that's the reason he went ahead and announced it, so people wouldn't sit 10 minutes and then be, like, pissed off. They sat for nothing. So it's, you know, he's saying he gave, you know, good warning.
Yeah. So, you know, we're putting it out there, public service announcement for all of our fans.
That's another thing I might have to start trying to avoid is what the – I want to see if I can go into this without knowing what the post-credit scene is. I almost made it to before Winter Soldier before I found out. It was like maybe 2 weeks before.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Guardians I ended up seeing a week after it came out, and I was not able to avoid the scene. So – you know, I got that. That was kind of spoiled for me.
I wouldn't have cared about that just because. I mean, yeah, Howard the Duck.
Yeah, I was about to say, spoiler alert.
Was a kind of a surprise, but it did. Like, it's not tying into anything. That was just like one off funny thing to show.
Right.
I'm assuming whatever happens after Avengers 2 will tie into what Ant-Man or Doctor Strange or something.
Exactly. Hell, we might even see Spider-Man. We'll see. So, all right.
We got Joe and Anthony Russo to direct two-part Marvel's Avengers Infinity War event.
Look at that.
And it's official from Marvel this time, so the rumors before were just rumors. Confirmation of what everyone already knew.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
All six Star Wars films coming to digital platforms this Friday. So if you're not a Daredevil fan...
Even if you are a Daredevil fan and you want to download these,
yeah.
If you want to have them in a digital format so that you can have them if you don't already have them through other means on your iPad or your tablet or your phone or whatever, go ahead and download them. It's going to cost you a pretty penny.
$20 a pop.
Oh, yeah. Per movie. So listen, here's my beef. And I know Tim Dog is the youngest member of the Comic Book Chronicles, and he may not appreciate this, but you know, we remember us old folk remember Star Wars pre-special edition, and they just are never going to release the original theater cuts of Star Wars 4, 5 and 6 ever again. That's going to suck. So, you know, I'm going to hold out. I don't have Star Wars on Blu-ray yet. I don't know how much longer I can hold out because I do want to watch these movies again on Blu-ray. But, you know, seeing that they're available for digital download is a good thing because that's just another means of getting it into the hands of the next generation of fans before Star Wars Episode 7 comes out in a few years.
All right. And not comic related, but Olivia Wilde routines with Garrett Hedlund for Tron 3.
Oh, come on. You know Dirt would be talking about this for sure if he was on the show. Dirt's too busy, you know, hiding out for dear life that he can't talk about Tron 3 and Olivia Wilde. So, you know Roddy, Dirt's happy.
And Roddy's also a Tron.
So. Yeah. I guess at some point I'm going to have to go back and watch these movies, you know, and pay attention, huh?
I only saw the second one.
That's funny.
I guess it was called Legacy.
That's funny. All right, let's see here. Jimmy Jean-Louis to return as the Haitian for Heroes Reborn, the NBC show. That's pretty cool that they're bringing back the old band, getting the band back together.
When is that coming out?
Let's see. Let's get this to open.
While you're getting that open, there are new Deadpool set photos. And must say, Ryan Reynolds looks pretty good in that Deadpool outfit.
Yeah, I'm glad that they got the costume right.
Yeah, because they got the costume down pat.
All right, let's see here. Heroes Reborn will air on NBC this fall.
Fall, okay.
All right, let's see here. Oh, no more spoilers for Avengers 2. Redo, but go past that.
So Deadpool screen confirmed as villain Ajax.
Okay.
Bat Kid begins, lands in June theatrical release. There's some rumors for the plot for Suicide Squad. There's some Fantastic Four posters and images of the Thing were released today.
Boo!
Oh, yeah, and Angel or Archangel for X-Men Apocalypse.
Images. Stop, Fox, stop, please!
Not enthused?
No, not at all. Not at all. And last on the on our list of news items, Ernie Hudson that we know so well from numerous roles, but we know him really, we know him best as Winston Zeddemore from Ghostbusters. Ernie Hudson is rumored for Black Panther role, specifically for the role of T'Chaka, T'Challa's father. So that's a pretty cool casting for him. That's a good get for Ernie Hudson. Good for him. If that's if that turns out to be the case.
All right, so now to the comic book news. IDW and DC team up for Star Trek, Green Lantern, The Spectrum War crossover.
How many wars is Green Lantern going to get into, right?
Oh, yeah. Everything's got to be a war.
Yeah, so. Right? You didn't notice that? It's like, really, another war?
Oh, boy. I was caught up in how cool it is that the two franchises are actually crossing over.
Well, listen, that's obviously the big news, right? The kicker for me is how many color themed wars can Green Lantern fight, right?
Right. So I need to go back and actually read up on that to see what creators are actually involved with it.
All right, let's see. Well, here we have some sad news to report. So comic book creator, is he a penciler, I believe? Yeah, comics artist Wilfredo Torres. His wife recently passed away from cancer. Very, very sorry. Our condolences to Mr. Torres and his family. And it looks like the comic book community have gotten together to raise funds by auctioning off pieces of art to help with the costs of the funeral and I guess to help pay off some medical bills. So please... they've posted links online using various social media using the hashtag Torres Benefit to post links to how to buy the pieces of art. Check that out, see what you can do to help out. It's always tough when especially if you're in a freelance type gig like being a comic book artist when major things happen in life that cost a lot of money. There's a lot of it's a pretty big burden, and it's really cool that there's a comic book community that can help out in times of need.
Yeah, I don't know if this is still the case or not, but I recently just learned that I think he lives here in the area. When I say like the area, I mean like
the ATL-ish.
Yeah, well, not even ATL, like an hour away from here.
Okay.
So like maybe closer. Between here and Atlanta.
Okay.
So I'm a little over an hour away.
All right. Well, like I said, the sincerest condolences from the Compo Chronicles family to the Torres family.
And check out his comic that came out this week, Jupiter's Circle.
Yes.
I was about to say Legacy.
That's yeah, too many one. Jupiters. Yeah, lots of Jupiters.
All right. Next up, it wasn't too much big comic book news. Let's see, CTM Media Holdings to become IDW Media Holdings. Hmm. So IDW doing a little synergy as far as getting names synced together.
Yep.
Let's see, IDW Games, speaking of them again, is going to adapt Bendis and Omen's powers. So I guess it'll be some type of, I don't know if it's a mobile game or board game or what.
Well, we've got a lot of announcements related to WonderCon.
Yeah, I was just skipping over some of them to get to some of the bigger ones. Like, let's see, Valiant announces the wedding of Ezio Manowar in July, and they also announced their Book of Death is going to be their big summer mega event. This will be like the third year in a row that they've done a summer event. So they sort of did a relaunch of their sort of universe over the last like 3 months, sort of kicked off with the Valiant.
All righty.
My dog is snoring in his sleep.
Oh no, we don't want to disturb Moby.
Yeah, like, it's not really snoring, like he was dreaming.
That's funny. At least he's not backward sneezing like he was last week.
Yeah, there's always something with him. And luckily I didn't have to record last night because, not to go into a long story, but I found a stray dog on our walk yesterday evening, and it had a collar but didn't have a tag, and it was like a little small chihuahua type dog. Mm-hmm. It was real friendly. So I felt bad about just leaving it out overnight. And I talked to my neighbors to see if it was one of theirs, but they had said that it had been wandering around since yesterday morning, just, I guess, in the neighborhood. So, and basically, long story short, I ended up taking it to the local animal hospital here and dropped them off as a quote-unquote good Samaritan.
There you go. Look at that. Oh, no. Look at that. Tim Dog, protector of dogs. Yay!
Yeah. I kind of feel bad about not, like, at least keeping it overnight and, like, taking it to, trying to take it to, like, a rescue or something, but supposedly it had been peeing blood that morning, so.
Yeah, it might have been in need of some medical treatment. That's probably a good idea anyway.
Yeah, even though when I saw it, he was peeing fine. We, of course, were taking turns peeing on everything.
Oh, mercy. All right, let's see. What are these big... What are these big announcements? Anything?
Yeah, back to the announcements. Molly Danger returns in April. All
right, so WonderCon is confirmed to be moving to Los Angeles.
That's big.
Yeah, it's big news. They're moving away from... What, weren't they San Francisco Con?
They were Anaheim.
Anaheim.
Which is supposedly like next door to Los Angeles, so right. It's like, is it that big? And supposedly it's only for a year because they're doing renovations or something, right?
I think so. I didn't read the story, so
I skimmed one earlier in the week when it first came out, but supposedly it's like there's gonna be some renovations in that area where they usually have the con, so they wouldn't have been able to have it there anyway.
Okay,
it's just a question of is this a 1 year thing or is it gonna be permanent? Supposedly that's one of the bigger cons too.
Yeah,
and it's like that and Emerald City and WonderCon were back to back weekends. CB Sebulski from Marvel was like berating an anonymous talent online earlier this week.
I was about to say it came out that CB Sebulski came out and said it was more than one.
Yeah,
he basically was mad at more than one artist for being for sketching at the con trying to make some dough and being behind on deadlines for books that they were working on. So he was basically saying get the hell out of here, go finish your pages, or else So
having fun before the work's done.
Yeah, seriously, trying to make that money off the books at the cons, all cash.
All right. So Hugo Award nominations were coming out. Guardians of the Galaxy, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, and The Flash were nominated.
Look at the next story.
Yeah, Hugo Awards become a joke after ballot stuffing affects nominations.
Goodness gracious. Let's see. Wow, so Wizard World is going to have a show in Las Vegas this year. That's pretty cool. I mean, I'm no fan of Wizard World, period, but that's cool that they're having a show in Vegas.
Right. Hey, this is the era of shows.
Yeah.
Everyone's got to have a show. All right, I guess that's enough for the comic news. Anything in the variant corner you want to speak to?
Taking a quick peek? Not really, although I did see this one thing it's sort of variant related. There's cool billboards up in some major cities, London, New York. I got to find the New York one for Daredevil.
Oh, yeah. I saw a couple of those posted online.
Right, and that's pretty cool. I've got to find that. That's definitely like Instagram material, Yeah. I got to find out where they have that and put that up there, and post that because, some of that stuff looks really cool. And we led off the comic book media news with that. So, I'm looking forward to finding that stuff around the city.
Time for me to do the ad read.
Yep, it rhymes with bad mead.
My Comic Shop is today's ad. Today's podcast is sponsored by mycomicshop.com. Go to coldslitterpodcast.com, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, click on My Comic Shop banner and order from a vast selection of new releases, back issues, vintage classics, graphic novels, and more to be delivered right to your door. Why bother schlepping to the local comic book store when you can order your books online? My Comic Shop through coldslitterpodcast.com. Do it today.
Yeah.
And now Moby is currently upside down sleeping.
Oh, no. Take it easy, Moby. Take it easy.
Yep. That's when that good sleep comes in. That's what I always say.
That REM sleep.
All right. So do we want to tear apart Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man?
Yeah, let me pull this up. I'm going to pull this up because, it's kind of a weird week. It's a shame that that Dirt's not with us tonight because I was looking forward to hearing his take on Convergence. But we're going to lead with probably, you know, something, a book that we both, that the show generally looks forward to reading. But knowing what's going to happen, what's pending in the Marvel Universe, you kind of have an idea that the storyline that's currently playing out in Miles Morales wasn't going to be given space or the room, you know, that it needed to really develop. And it felt like that, you know, an ending was kind of rushed through in this issue. What did you think?
My thought is, it seems like a lot of Bendis' stories end up following the same kind of flat note. At least the last two arcs of Miles Morales stories have felt this way.
Right.
The last one I remember, and I may be wrong, because I'm not counting the one with his dad and the S.H.I.E.L.D. revelations, because that sort of tied in with this one.
Right.
But when the whole Peter Parker...
Oh, the clone.
The clones and fighting the Green Goblin.
Yeah.
It kind of just ended.
Yeah, kind of anticlimactic.
And there was no, even with this being the last issue of Miles Morales, there was like no resolution with Spider-Man. Or did we even find out who those two people were in the like full body suits and the helmets?
I don't remember. I don't know. I do not think so. How terrible is that?
There was no resolution with that, or with like how Peter is alive. And
yeah. Yeah, we know nothing about that.
The whole Kate Bishop.
Yes.
There's no like resolution with him and her.
Well, there is in this issue. It's kind of lame, though. You know, I'm going to ring the spoiler bell because it seems like we're just very annoyed at this. Be prepared for some detailed, you know, bitching and moaning right now. We can say that we're on a podcast, damn it.
Right.
So basically, what comes out of this is, you know, Miles saying after, you know, the quick resolution to the story, Miles saying, you know, we're over. And I'm like, that's it? That's all it is? That's, you know, we don't get anything more out of that? Because, you know, like, as soon as we come out of this, you know, the post-battle isn't very long at all, you know, and then we get to the end of the issue. You know, we're left, you know, there's a lot of little threads left dangling, and I wonder if they're going to resolve that in
the ultimate end,
or if they're just going to leave that for what could happen possibly in the next iteration of Miles Morales, wherever he appears.
They have to resolve it in the ultimate end book, because by the time this Secret Wars tie-in book happens, Miles Morales was the only ongoing ultimate book left.
Right.
And then, like, on the cover of the book, they have, like, Thor and Captain America, who are both supposed to be dead in that universe.
Yeah, it's Nick Fury. It's you know what it is? You know what's funny? The cover of Ultimate End number one is literally the movie Avengers plus the Wasp and plus Miles Morales.
Yeah.
That's really what it is. It's pretty amusing.
So you have that going for you. Yes, we did see the Ultimate X-Men and all new X-Men, so I guess there's that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the issue just kind of ends, and that's it.
Yeah, you know what? I'm inclined to agree with you. I'm starting to sense that pattern in the Bendis stories where, you know, there's a great build-up, and there's not the best follow-through, and he doesn't necessarily stick the best landing. You know, we don't even have to be the Russian judges to give it a low score. So, you know, I think that's probably pretty accurate right there. So it seems that Tim has stepped away for a second. Oh, there you go. I was about to say, I don't know if Moby's okay, but...
No, messing with my eyelash.
TMI, Tim, TMI. Oh. So I guess we have mixed feelings about the ending of Miles Morales.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder what's going to happen in the, you know, where this is going to go in the future. I wonder if David Marquez is going to stick around with Miles.
Yeah, I'd assume he'll have his own ongoing, he being Miles, will have his own ongoing once Secret Wars is over with.
Right.
I could see, more than likely, I could see Marvel switching up, giving some new creators a chance, you know, have their shot at Miles. And probably, like, move Marquez on to something else, because that's kind of like, I think, at least it seems like that's all he's done since he started at Marvel. I'm sure he's probably done some other stuff I'm just not aware of.
Right. Well, I mean, it was him and Pacelli that really launched Miles, but Marquez is the one that stuck to it, and he's really carried it. And...
Well, they moved Pacelli over to the main Marvel 616.
Right.
He did a couple, like, Guardians of the Galaxy issues.
Exactly. But I think that, you know, and I talked to Marquez at a New York Comic Con ago, two New York Comic Cons ago. Oh, no, it was Special Editions, last Special Edition before this year. And Marquez was, you know, was pretty forthcoming when he said, you know, he stuck with Ultimate Spider-Man and kind of missed out on a couple of opportunities to do big things. I thought this was a big thing, but when you look at the sales, it just doesn't, you know.
Yeah, the sales aren't there. I read a CBR interview, I'd assume, where he was saying the same thing. I can't remember if he said he stayed because he liked Miles or if he liked working with Bendis.
Right, it's probably a little bit of both.
But yeah, I remember he did say how, you know, he was offered other gigs, but he turned them down.
Right, and I've heard that straight from, you know, the proverbial horse's mouth. And now, you know, I guess this is his opportunity to go and move on to something that's bigger, you know, that's got a bigger profile, that's got, you know, more sales attached to it. So, you know, but I'll be very disappointed because I really love the look that he gives, Miles Morales and his supporting characters. And I'd be very, you know, I'd have to see what the art looks like, you know, in whatever book Miles Morales comes, you know, starts in the next, I guess, post-Secret Wars.
Oh, and what's up with this roommate that just all of a sudden has a part to play in this issue?
He's been around.
He has? Okay.
He's been around. But he has not played very much of a big role, and obviously he's, you know, he's the engine for this, you know, for this story that, you know, that gets things moving, and obviously it's another plot thread that's left dangling. You know, like, yeah. Well, we have another, you know, spoiler alert. Well, I've already rang the bell already, but we've got another person that knows who Miles is, and we're just left with it at that, you know?
Okay.
It's like, what do we do, you know, what do we do with that now? I guess we'll wait and see.
What do we want to go to next?
Let's see.
You want something more cheerful? You want to do Deadpool?
Well, let's talk about other stuff that we've read.
That we both read?
Yeah, I read Ant-Man number 4 and Avengers World number 19, so pick one of those two.
I didn't have a chance to type it in. Yeah, Ant-Man number 4, I said this is my runner-up for Click of the Week.
I understand. I definitely understand. This was quality work this week.
Yeah, as per usual with the creative team. Let me look at my notes here. Another employee added to Team Ant-Man.
Ha ha ha.
I forget the official name of his security.
Whatchamacallit? Is it
Ant-Man Securities? The name of his company.
Ant-Man Security Solutions.
Yeah. So yeah, another C-list character, of course a guy I've never heard of before, gets added here. We find out we get a lot of background with who's the villain's name? Darren Cross?
Mm-hmm.
Is that who Yellow Jacket is in the Ant-Man movie?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
He apparently was killed by Ant-Man, but his son is alive and trying to revive his dad, and involves doing stuff with Cassie, who was kidnapped last issue.
Mm-hmm. And it also involves Cassie being, having been exposed to Pym particles herself, you know, and her adventures as what was her stature?
Stature. Even though they don't want you to really remember that anymore.
Right.
They want her to be Kitty.
Yep.
Cassie Lang.
Yep. You know, there's some great moments in this. You know, a lot of the great lines that, who's writing this? Humphreys, right?
No, Nick Spencer.
Oh, Nick Spencer. I apologize. Nick Spencer, you're doing a great job on this. Don't get me wrong. Nick Spencer's doing a great job on this. He gives Machine Smith some great, great lines. He's basically, part of a support group for, supervillain. And, you know, he tries to make some money on the side by playing to kids' parties. And so he's at the kids' party, and he's trying to get paid. And the mother is like, you know, you didn't say Hail Hydra. So she tries to stiff him on the bill. And he yells back at her, I was never in Hydra, you Whole Foods eating cereal listening yucky serious filth.
Yeah, the cereal mention got me.
Exactly. That made me laugh real hard. That was pretty, pretty good. And there's also a Run-DMC shout out in here too. So you know, you definitely want to read this, and if you appreciate some of these callbacks to pop culture references, it's pretty interesting. It's pretty fun.
Okay. Avengers World number 19.
All right. So
you seem
Avengers
to enjoy it.
World number 19. This was I like reading this because it does fill in it continues to fill in the gap, the 8 months later gap where we find out that that AIM is all of a sudden under the control of Robert DaCosta, who we better know as Sunspot. And so we have, you know, this story following two separate paths. One is the path that Sunspot takes to take over AIM. The other path is Starbrand and Nightmask doing something or other, fighting some other people, you know, not 100% sure what's going on there. I kind of lost track of that. The crux of the story for me was Bobby DaCosta, you know, fighting for control of AIM. And there's some really great scenes in here involving some flashbacks, you know, kind of reestablishing, you know, some of Bobby's motivation, maybe what drives him, you know, in this current iteration as a superhero. He's no longer the New Mutant that we had kind of grown up reading, and it's kind of cool to see him mature. It's kind of funny that we see these characters really blossom, and I hope that they don't take any steps back once they're not on an Avengers team anymore. You know, like post-Secret Wars, I wonder what they're going to do with Sunspot and Cannonball. I would not be surprised if they put them back into the X world.
Yeah, that's what I would expect. I do like them giving, at least, especially Sunspot, more of a higher profile.
Yeah, more shine.
And Cannonball, too, because, you know, he's got this thing going with the kid and
Smasher, right.
Smasher.
And you know what's funny is that this reminds me of when Justice and Firestar were added to the Avengers back in like the mid to late 90s, and that really gave that crew, like the New Warriors crew, and like sort of like, you know, like Junior X-Men also, and especially in Firestar's case, you know, more shine, more exposure. You know, kind of seeing them graduate to the big leagues was kind of cool. But then they got shuffled off back into the minor. I don't want to call them the minors. But you also started to see, you know, their profiles were just never the same once they left the Avengers. So I hope that they don't do that with Sunspot and Cannonball.
Yeah, of course we have to wait and see what state the X-Men are left in after Secret Wars.
Yep. So I like this.
Just off the topic, Axel Alonso clarified his statements of X-Men being in their own separate world or universe after Secret Wars and said that his statements were taken out of context, and Marvel has no plans to split them off and have them be off on their own.
Right. What's funny is that when you say in their own separate universe, only in comics would that actually mean that they get shunted into an alternate dimension, right?
Yeah.
Most people, when they say that in regular conversation, understand that, yes, you're not actually shunting them into an alternate universe. So, you know, leave it to a comics conversation to completely take that out of context and completely blow it up.
The only other thing I'll add for Avengers World is, didn't issue 18 end with Sunspot being in a precarious situation? It's like, I remember like the last page being like a splash page of like something happening with him, and this issue like picked up and didn't even pick up from that.
It's a good question. I'm going to go back and look, see if I have access to it.
Yeah. Almost whatever room they were in, he was in arguing with the Scientist Supreme, like blew up, or it was something, some dramatic thing happened, and it doesn't seem, this issue definitely didn't at least pick up right from that spot.
Right.
Because it showed him showing up back on AIM Island with Hyperion and Manifold.
Right. I don't recall, Avengers World 18, let's see. So I'm opening this up, see if I can get to the end, and see if I can confirm for you and our listeners and viewers what it is you're referencing. So we have here a battle, everything dies. No, no precarious situation.
Oh, I was wrong then.
No, they do follow up on it. What it is the precarious situation that you're referencing, they do reference when what he's talking about is the AIM leader, Forsen, the Scientist Supreme, tries to blow up the new AIM board of directors. But Sunspot saves them all.
Oh, okay.
So, right, and then this leads to the showdown that we see in this issue. So that's what you remember. You're remembering most of it correctly, but they do actually get out of that alive, and that's what leads to the showdown in this issue.
Okay.
All right, cool. Let's see. Let me jump to something that you did not read. I read a lot this week. I had a lot of time on the subway this week, so bear with me. I'm going to have probably, it's probably going to be like a modified rapid fire review day for me. I'm going to talk about a surprising book that I read this week, because you'd mentioned it before, and it's been you know, towards the front of my mind tonight. It's the last issue, The Death of Deadpool number 45. And what's funny about this is that, you know, it really plays on a lot of the tropes that we understand, you know, like a good superhero death to be. But obviously, you know, Jerry Duggan is not, you know, is not using that at all. It's actually the first Deadpool issue I really read from start to finish, or at least technically the Deadpool story in this. Just side note, this issue contains one main Deadpool story and a whole slew of Deadpool short stories contributed by a number of creators, but the main Deadpool story is what I'm talking about. And the story, you know, this is the first one I've read in a while, so I kind of lost track of where we are. I did not realize that Ultimatum had made an appearance in this, and Flag Smasher had kind of reared his head. And for any of the old comic Captain America fans out there, you'll recognize Flag Smasher and Ultimatum as villains from the Gruenwald Captain America era. And, you know, it's kind of cool to see them come back. And basically, the gist of the story is, spoiler alert, the gist of the story is the old Flag Smasher is dead. The new Flag Smasher is out to kill Deadpool and basically goes after his family. And, you know, a lot of the supporting cast that have built up from S.H.I.E.L.D. Agent Preston to the magician guy who was summoning the dead presidents at the beginning of Duggan's run, they're all here. They all, you know, contribute to the story, and they all basically take on Ultimatum. There is a really cool sequence of Deadpool basically tearing Ultimatum a new one. It's pretty awesome. I love the fact, you know, I love the way that it was laid out. The art in this, the art in the main Deadpool story by Mike Hawthorne was so good.
I do enjoy his art, even though I don't really read Deadpool that much.
It's excellent. It's you know, it's very well done.
Does he just do the main story?
Yes, he does the main story. It's well done. It's well laid out. You know, it's very clear. Very, you know, it's easy to understand. And Duggan's story has, there's just a lot of cool little, you know, cool little lines in it. You know, you could almost, it's almost quotable, and that's pretty cool.
Nice.
And, you know, I just had a lot of fun reading this. This is a definite candidate for Click of the Week for me. You know, no spoilers there. It was just a really fun read. And, you know, the spoiler that I'm going to give you here is that the death of Deadpool, quote unquote, isn't really a death at all. It's sort of related to Incursion, so it's kind of funny, you know. It's the last issue, but you know, it's all very convenient in
they
that.
They kept the humor there, huh?
Exactly. And the last issue is basically, you know, just a way of ending this particular volume ahead of Secret Wars. So
gotcha.
You know, it's a fun little read. You know, you don't have to be that familiar with the Deadpool stories that Duggan has been telling for a number of issues now, for 45 issues now, but you know, it helps. But ultimately, it's just a fun little read and a very surprising candidate for Click of the Week for me. All right. Let me keep going. I guess you've only got one other book to talk about.
Yeah. So yeah, feel free to
go on and ramble.
All yeah.
Right. Here we go. So I'm not going to spoil too much of Darth Vader number 4 because I know you want to read this. All right. So
yes.
I'm just going to say that Darth Vader 4 is very well done. It's really one of the highlights. It's one of the strongest books in the Star Wars relaunch at Marvel. You know, LaRocca is still doing the art. It's still kicking some serious butt on this. We're still dealing with the supporting character that was introduced in the second issue of Darth Vader, the archaeologist who deals with droids. Aphra, I think her name is. And, you know, we get a little bit of a resolution to that particular storyline. And, you know, we're establishing her as possibly an ongoing character in this series. The one caveat I have with reading this, and I know I've mentioned this before, is that reading Darth Vader, because of when this series is set up, It's set up post episode 4. So what do we have in terms of our knowledge of Darth Vader up until then? We have episodes 1, 2, 3, and then 4. So, you know, this comic really does draw upon a lot of what happens in episodes 1, 2, and 3. You know, we're dealing with Geonosis. We're dealing with battle droids from, you know, from the prequel movies. And there's actually a callback to a scene in one of the prequel movies. I believe it's from episode 2. Between Anakin and Padme, and it just brings back a lot of bad memories of Hayden Christensen. You know what I mean? I got Tim to smile.
Bad memories.
Yeah, bad memories of Hayden Christensen. So, you know, it's kind of a tough. It's tough that it brings back those memories, but ultimately, it's still, you know, it's still a very good read. I would probably recommend in order the Darth Vader book, the Star Wars book, and then the Princess Leia book in that order for people who want to read Star Wars stuff from Marvel right now.
What's the order again?
I would go Darth Vader, the Star Wars book, and then Princess Leia. Hmm. What do you think?
If only they came out in that order. Because, let's see, Leia comes first, right?
Oh, you mean, you know, monthly?
Well, I'm just saying, like, as far as story, because hers takes place right after... New Hope.
Well, so does Vader.
Yeah, both of those are like right after. Star Wars definitely needs to be like last, if I remember correctly. Because like Star Wars and Darth Vader are kind of at the same going on, taking place at the same time.
I see what you mean. Literally. I see what you mean. I see what you mean. I see what you mean. Well, I'm not even focused on the chronology. You know, I'm just focused on, you know, like the quality of the story, quality of the art, and, you know, and what's going on in them. So. All right, let's see. You know what? I'm going to dive into it. Convergence.
Yeah, I want to hear this.
Did you read any Convergence, Tim?
No, I might try to read the Convergence one, but that's it. I have jotted down a couple of the Convergence books I want to flip through this week. This is like 2 weeks ago I started making my weekly Convergence list of books I said I want to check out. And like I opened a couple of them, kind of quickly checked out the art. None of the art really grabbed me, so I'm just like, yeah, I'll just pass.
Right, see? Now, I'm going to open up some caffeine because I need a little bit of a jolt to talk about Convergence. Pardon me, people. I'm not, you know, no product placement. So, I'm going to start with Convergence number one because there is a scene in Convergence number one that replays in every single Convergence book this week, all the Convergence number ones. And I foresee that every Convergence number one is going to reference this particular scene.
In a good way, I hope.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert's in full effect. So basically, Convergence number one plays out like my nightmare for Secret Wars, right? So Secret Wars, we understand to be the Beyonders pulling everything together, right? All these different, you know, realities, right? Convergence is Brainiac pulling together these different cities and actually telling these cities, you must fight. If you don't fight for yourself, you will die.
Fight.
Right. And I'm like, what? So reading Convergence number one, right, and just reading it and just trying to figure out what, you know, how did we get to this point? Why are we doing this? Because, and I apologize for bringing Marvel into this, but this is how I thought about it. Remember when, way back when Hickman started his whole mumbo jumbo, right?
Right.
We started with this whole incursion thing, and it's been leading up to something. It's been building up. My problem with Convergence right now is that there's been no build up to this. We don't really understand how we've gotten to this point.
Technically, there has been a little.
The multiversity stuff?
Multiversity and the Superman Doomed led into this. And then the two weeklies.
But it hasn't felt like, maybe it's because we haven't been reading it like that, where we haven't built up to it. I'm sure if Dirt was here, he would understand this a lot better, and he would understand the build up to it. But I didn't really feel like we had seen why we had gotten to this point, and why Brainiac had gotten to this point, and how we had gotten to where he wants everyone to duke it out, and to have the strong survive. It's like, when did Brainiac all of a sudden become Apocalypse?
Yeah, and... Supposedly, because Jeff King is one of the co-writers on Convergence, and supposedly they brought him in because they wanted a new voice, because someone that's on the outside of comics to make this more reader-friendly. As far as just the main Convergence series, that's what they said. Hmm. I don't know if that's the case because I haven't read the first issue or not. I tried reading the issue zero last week and had to stop after like 5 or 6 pages because it just didn't appeal to me too much.
I was reading this for academic purposes. I don't think I would ever pick up this book, you know, off the stands, and that's a sad thing, right?
Right.
So I read this, and like I said, this is like my nightmare version of what Secret Wars is going to be. I still have a lot of doubts about Secret Wars, right? But this is like my worst case scenario. So that's not a good thing. So I'm going to jump right into some of the Convergence titles I did read / flip through, because I have to confess I couldn't bring myself to read every single word on every single page, right? I read, I pseudo read, speed read Justice League number 1, Batman and Robin number 1, Speed Force number 1, and Superman number 1. Just kind of flipping through them to see what was going on, which characters were being highlighted, and so on and so forth. So in Superman number 1, we have... Actually, wait. Let me set this up with what's set up in Convergence number 1. So basically, when the domes are put up around these cities by Brainiac, pretty much everyone is depowered for a year.
So they've been sitting there for a year?
Pretty much. Pretty much. Right? Or at least what to them feels like a year. You know, who knows how time is passing on Brainiac's little planet, right? Mm-hmm. So once he drops the fields, the domes, everyone gets their powers back. And that's when the fighting really begins. So the Superman book deals with what happens to Clark and Lois. They happen to be trapped in their version of Gotham City. What happens to them when Clark has been depowered for a year? You know, so what happens? Somebody gets knocked up.
Well,
right. Spoiler alert. So, you know, we have that. That's one of the highlights of the Superman issue, right? You know, we kind of see what happens when Superman's been depowered for a year. Speed Force number 1, we deal with what happens when the Flash has been depowered for a year. And spoiler alert, the Flash in this issue is Wally.
So everyone's depowered in these first week issues.
Right, exactly. Or at least they're depowered for a portion of it, right? That's part of the story. We have Justice League number 1, which is kind of like a play on, which is unbelievable to me. It's actually a play on the all-female Avengers, the A-Force.
Mm-hmm.
All the characters in this Justice League issue are the female heroes. And honestly, I don't really know what happens in this one. I know that they're opposing a villainous Aquaman. I'm not sure which world he's from.
It might be the Flashpoint if he's villainous.
Possibly. The Batman and Robin issue deals with the Frank Miller, Jim Lee Batman and Robin continuity.
Huh.
You know, deals with that little group trying to protect Gotham City before the bubble, the dome comes down. So, you know, all in all, these issues were, you know, I hate to call them throwaways, but it almost felt like, you know, I really was just wasting time reading them. It was kind of nice to see these characters. Don't get me wrong. It was nice to see Wally West and to see, you know, the character again. But, you know, it didn't feel like it was, you know, that important to read to me. Obviously, I'm biased because I am much, much more of a Marvel zombie. But it didn't feel like it was an absolute necessity to read. But, you know, we're reading them for review purposes, so I can definitely say that, you know, if you're a DC head, if you've really gotten into pre-New 52 DC and, you know, kind of miss it, then, you know, you're going to get your taste of this stuff during Convergence. You know, hopefully they develop some of the more high-selling concepts that come back during Convergence, and they, you know, they bring some of the stuff back. But right now, I'm having trouble kind of getting my, getting a grip on some of these Convergence stories. That's just my take. Let's see here. You're missing out if you didn't read. What did I have up here? Shield number 4
is on my list. I read the first 2 issues and took a break. I guess a break being just one issue if I'm going to pick up number 4.
Right. Well, you know, they're mostly one and dones. And what's cool about this issue is that it highlights Sue Storm as a heroic Sue Storm. You know, she is one of the preeminent female heroes in the Marvel
Shield, right?
Exactly. But she is one of the preeminent Marvel heroes. She is, you know, a fairly kick-ass character on her own. And yeah, you know, we kind of lost track of that, you know, since they've been, you know, screwing with the FF for many moons now. Many, many moons they've been screwing with the FF. But it's kind of cool to see Sue get an episode, an issue that highlights, you know, her capabilities as a, you know, as a hero. And there's one thing in here that I did have a gripe about. It includes a retcon that I did not know anything about. I've never seen referenced anywhere. Huh. I had to, you know, I opened up Wikipedia. I opened up the Marvel Wikipedia. Didn't see a damn thing about this reference. I'm not going to spoil everything. But it involves something that Phil says to Sue in order to kind of spur her on, to help her finish the mission.
Oh, because that's what she needs, of course.
Exactly. Like a little bit of a kick in the butt. And one of the things about Phil that they're trying to, you know, establish in both the cinematic and the comic book universe is that he knows things about the heroes that maybe they don't realize S.H.I.E.L.D. knows about them. You know, he has like a lot of the inside dirt, a lot of the superhero gossip even.
Okay.
So, you know, Phil knows these things, and it's kind of interesting that he plays this particular card. And Sue even says, you know, are you going to bring up, you know, another failure of mine at some point? And I was like, when did this happen? Like, what continuity are they referencing here? I was very, very confused. So, you know, that's something I would actually bring up to Mark Waid at some point and be like, hey, man, where did that come from? I should look that up online and see if anyone else picked up on that. But that, you know, that's
and,
like
Chris. Okay. I was gonna say the artist is it Chris Sprouse?
Chris Sprouse, who we know from Supreme.
Is that what he's from? From Image Book Supreme.
Well, the Image Book Supreme, and I believe Alan Moore's DC books.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I know he did one of the Multiversity issues, and he's gonna do the Thor's plural.
Right.
Thor's book.
Right, but he did. Was it Tom Strong?
Yeah. Okay. Tom Strong. That's where I've seen him from.
So. You know, he had a long run on those types, on those books. So, you know, if you're not reading S.H.I.E.L.D., it's actually pretty fun. They do try to incorporate some of the characters from the TV show, but obviously you don't need to watch the TV show to read the book.
Okay.
All right, let's see. What else did I read? I'm just going to go on the comics list because I didn't have a chance to really input.
Let me get my last one out of the way. Mine is Descender number 2.
All right.
And... number one, I love the inclusion of the recap page, something you don't really get to see much in indie books.
Yeah, I was about to say outside of Marvel, right?
Right, because DC, they're forbidden. So it's, for someone that reads so many books and always forgets what happens from month to month or 2 weeks to 2 weeks if you're double shipping,
right?
It's good to have that reminder. So, of course, the sender is about Tim 21, a boy robot who is trying to remember his family, and what happened, you know, what his life was like before, I guess he was deactivated and then woke back up. So we learn about his background and the family he grew up with. We saw a bunch of flashbacks because throughout the issue he was, like, downloading memories. So mm-hmm. we got, like, these one-page, like, flashback scenes, and then, like, in the bottom right-hand corner would be the, you know, percentage update of the download that's completed. So that was cool seeing how like the family accepted him and considered them like one of their own. And there was a nice, very surprising ending to the book, but of course I'm sure it's not the end because it would be a short comic.
If it ended after two issues.
Yeah, but a very good issue.
Cool. Cool, very cool. All right, rapid fire.
Go for it, it's all you.
All right, rapid fire. Guardians 3000 number 7. I'm a huge fan of this series. This issue kind of left me, you know, it's more Guardians meets Guardians. It was good, not great, you know, but still, you know, definitely a lot of fun. Another, you know, candidate for Click of the Week for me. Howard the Duck number 2 was just a silly book. But come on, it's Howard the Duck. What am I expecting, right?
I had almost forgotten that came out. That and Spider-Woman.
I can't bring myself to read Spider-Woman. I don't understand. Maybe it's the costume that's just not... I'm not that enthusiastic about.
Oh, come on.
I guess. And I'll try it. I'll go back and read.
Speaking of Spider-Woman, off topic, but Marvel had their... I guess it would be a spring a creator retreat that just ended, I think, today. So usually, they're like, Bleeding Cool or someone will have, like, Actually, not even bleeding cool, but sometimes the creators will like tweet out pictures of them at like dinners and stuff like that, or at, or in the meet the writers' room, taking a group photo or whatever. And if that actually happened this week, I missed it. But I saw Dennis Hopeless say how he was like, had a good time in New York before the show started. So I asked him, I was like, "Were you there for the retreat?" And he said, "Yeah." So I believe that's his first Marvel retreat. So
nice.
Good for him. And then as I was going through his Twitter feed, seeing sort of the back and forth, it seems like he was there besides besides the regulars of, Bendis and Dan Slott and Hickman. And, Hickman might not have been there since I think he's taking a Marvel break. But Jason Aaron was there. But newcomers, as far as I can tell, would be Dennis Hopeless, Jeff Lemire, and Al Ewan.
Hmm.
So good to see that.
Very cool.
There were some more there. I'd like to see Nick Spencer get in that room.
Hmm.
But yeah, I was glad, especially Al Ewan, because I'm digging his Loki and Captain America and the Mighty Avengers.
Cool. So back to rapid reviews.
Back to rapid
Hulk.
Reviews.
Hulk, number 14.
How was that?
Another Jerry Duggan book. The highlight of this book for me is Deadpool's guest appearance. I kind of like where Duggan is finally taking this. It seems like this story has gone on for far too long. This whole Omega Hulk thing. But,
Kind of stretched out.
Yes. Yes. It feels like it's just been going on forever and ever. This is just the next chapter of a battle between Red Hulk and Doc Green. And, there's a bunch of cool sequences at the beginning that involve Deadpool. But most of this issue is just lots of, fisticuffs back and forth between Red Hulk and Doc Green. And the issue ends with a cliffhanger, obviously trying to bait us into reading the next issue. But, ultimately it seems like the Duggan may wrap this book better than it started. I think he'll actually stick the landing. I think the build-up to the story was just very difficult to slog through, the whole Omega Hulk thing. But now that we've gotten to this point, it's actually not the bad. It's not as bad a story as I thought. So that's a good thing. He's actually...
So it is the end of the arc?
It's getting there. There's one more issue, I think.
Okay.
There's one more issue, I think.
One more.
But like I said, it's kind of cool that he might actually stick the landing on this one as opposed to what we were criticizing Bendis for.
Sticking the landing.
Exactly. I actually read Jupiter Circle number one, and it was pretty good. It involves, a group of heroes who come up during the 50s, during J. Edgar Hoover's reign as director of the FBI. And basically the story goes... Spoiler alert. The story goes that the government wants to employ these heroes, and the heroes don't want to necessarily be employed by them. So, they have to use other means of getting them to possibly bend to their will. I'll leave it at that without spoiling any more.
Have you been keeping up with the Jupiter's Legacy?
Nope.
Okay. But this is kind of easy to pick up by itself and read?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, just, just pick it up, easy to read. First issue, number one issue is obviously, pretty simple. So it's kind of cool that there's a cool callback on the first page of from the Super Friends cartoon. It's before your time, Tim.
Hey.
All right. More rapid fire. Captain Marvel number 14 is more Black Vortex stuff. Whatever. Let's see here. Angela, Asgard's Assassin, number 5, was actually not that bad an issue. Surprisingly enough.
I'm issue behind on that. So
I'm not. You know what? I haven't read this book in a couple of issues, but this issue actually helped bring together what's been happening, and it wasn't that bad a read. I was pleasantly surprised by it. So I may want to read the next issue because I'm caught up. In a sense, I'm caught up now. All New Hawkeye number 2. Is more of a trip down memory lane, but it's Jeff Lemire, right, writing this?
Yes.
So Lemire is doing a good job of weaving a present day story into flashbacks involving Clinton Barton and his brother Barney, and how they basically, it's basically a retelling of their origin story, but slightly more in depth as to how they got to become circus people. And, you know, that's what this issue kind of delves into. So if you're ever curious as to how, you know, Clint and Barney found their way into the circus, pick up this issue and see what you think. The art is actually it's pretty offbeat in terms of the flashback sequence, you know, like during the flashback sequences. So that might be off-putting to some, but it's actually, I think it's pretty good. It's effective because it changes the mood, it changes the atmosphere, it changes just the entire way you look at the scene. So, you know, if you're interested in Hawkeye the character, even a little bit, I would suggest you read this book. It's actually pretty good. And another sleeper candidate for Click of the Week for me. All right, let's see here. Any more rapid fires? No, that's pretty much it for me because I covered all that convergence stuff I really didn't want to read. Oh, one other book that I read this week. I'm a big fan of Mouse Guard. And what came out this week from Mouse Guard was an issue of, I'm trying to find the full name of it. It's under Boom, right?
Or Archaea.
No, it's under Boom. It's Mouse Guard Legends of the Guard, Volume 3, Number 2. And I, you know, listen, I'm a huge fan of this. David Peterson can do no wrong. What he's doing with the Legends of the Guard volume is that he contributes the framework for the story, but he has guests contribute the, you know, it's an anthology type book, but it's kind of wrapped in a different, you know, there's an overarching theme. And so you don't necessarily have to be that familiar with the Mouse Guard universe to read this. It's just a great, you know, issue that stands alone. I would suggest you read this. There's a couple of great little, you know, one-shot Mouse Guard stories in the Mouse Guard universe that are in here. Specifically, one of two of the stories in here. One is called Fallen with art and story by Dustin Gwynn. You know, DC Comics. Mm-hmm. And the other is The Dancers, art and story by Kyla Vander Kloot. I'm not sure if I've ever read anything that she's done. I'm assuming that's a she. But, you know, I really like these two particular short stories set in the Mouse Guard universe. I can't recommend Mouse Guard enough to people. It's just a great little read. It's a lot easier to read in trade paperback format. I can't lie. The single issues are kind of like this weird shape square. You know, if you ever get the physical copy. You know, like obviously, yeah, we're dealing with our preview copies that aren't physical. But, you know, if you ever encounter the physical copy, it's a little on the awkward side to handle. But, you know, I can't stress it enough. It's just a great, great read overall. And if you're looking to recommend something that's not superhero-y, that's kind of superheroic, but not, you know, doesn't involve capes and tights, try Mouse Guard. So that concludes Rapid Fire. Rapid Fire Reviews for the week of April 9th.
So we want to do Clicks of the Week now.
Yeah, Clicks of the Week!
Let's see. Let's do our co-hosts who aren't here tonight. Let's see. Derp's Click of the Week is Deep State Number 5 from Justin Jordan, Ariella Christantina, and Ben Wilsonham. Okay. Boom Studios. I would try to switch screens and do all that stuff, but
yeah, too much work for us.
Yeah, I don't want to break anything. Righty Cats was Ant-Man 4, but he says Guardians 3000 number 7.
Nice. I liked it too. I have an idea what my click of the week is. You know, I liked a lot of books this week. A lot of them were funny.
He said definitely shout out the Ant-Man number 4.
Cool. Cool, cool, cool.
And mine is Descender number 2.
All right. That's cool. And I'm going to stick with my guns. I mentioned this earlier, and I had second thoughts when I thought of how much I like Guardians 3000 number 7. But I'm going to stick with my initial idea of making Deadpool number 45 / number 450. My click of the week this week, just the main story, because all of the 60 pages worth of backup stories, you know, they're great add-ons, but the main story was still pretty good. It was a lot of fun to read. You know, I definitely enjoyed seeing Ultimatum, you know, getting its comeuppance and, you know, getting all shot to pieces. It was pretty fun. Duggan has such a great voice for Deadpool. You know, he's got a great grasp of how Deadpool should be, you know, should be voiced. And, you know, I'm hoping that the movie is, as loath as I am to admit this, I'm hoping that the movie succeeds in portraying Deadpool, not necessarily in the life field era Deadpool, but I'd like to hope that they kind of take some cues from where Deadpool is now. So my click of the week is Deadpool number 45/450 by Jerry Duggan, Hawthorne and Company.
Nice. All right. That about wraps up tonight's episode of Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
I want to thank everyone for tuning in live tonight or on the video replay or audio replay.
Yay!
Whichever is your preferred method of supporting our show.
And there you go.
Once again, we do appreciate your support. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at CBCron. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. And Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. And check out his website, PopCultureNetwork.com. And with that, we'll be back 9 p.m. Eastern Time next Thursday night. We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off, and enjoy Daredevil.
Yeah, son! We're getting on Netflix!
Yay! And Game of Thrones is this Sunday also.
Yay, I totally stepped all over that. What was that, Tim?
I said, and also Game of Thrones is this Sunday.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Winter is coming.
In the show.
Yeah.
There you go. All righty. Now we are signing off.
It's time to do. What's on your